Africa is at a crossroads, and which road its leaders take will shape the lives of billions of people, not only in Africa, but also beyond its borders. Often overlooked, population trends play a significant role in sub-Saharan Africa's chances for prosperity. Between 15 and 20 million young people are expected to join the African workforce every year for the next three decades. Investing in the health and education of these young people and providing opportunities for employment will be essential to ensuring a future marked by economic prosperity and stability in the region. You're listening to Friday Podcast from the Environmental Change and Security Program and the Maternal Health Initiative at the Wilson Center in this special series, Africa in Transition, produced with support from the Population Institute. We share insights from experts and practitioners focused on harnessing the opportunities in Africa's transition to enable a prosperous future. I'm Lauren Reese, and in today's podcast, we share highlights from a recent Africa in Transition event. First, we'll hear from Dr. Parfait Alundu Enyege, Associate Director of the Cornell Population Center, on how a systems approach and partnerships will be necessary to ensuring social, economic, and demographic transitions that benefit all members of society.
The point I'm going to make are threefold. The first is that African countries are not in the middle of one transition. They are in the midst of several transitions. All of these transitions are an opportunity for prosperity, an opportunity for growth, an opportunity to build human capital. But at the same time, all of these transitions also have a potential for divergence, which is creating multiple Africa, a two-tiered Africa, in which you're going to have a rise in inequality, both within countries and between countries. And so the challenge is, therefore, to build prosperity, but to do it for all. And so in order to do this, especially as far as building human capital, we have to move away from thinking about education and human capital in a piecemeal fashion and have interventions that are scattered, but rather think about the entire system together and think about the synergies within that system, to think about the partnerships that we can build within that system, and to think about the economic integrity and viability of the entire system.
Now let's hear from Dr. Gladys Kalema Zikusoka, the founder and CEO of Conservation Through Public Health, a nonprofit in Uganda that integrates health, environment, and alternative livelihood approaches to development and conservation. Here, Dr. Kalema Zikusoka highlights the co-benefits of these integrated approaches, the role of African women leaders in conservation, and the importance of enabling social enterprises.
I think a lot of it is all to do with empowerment. You know, like as in, it's great that, you know, the youth are very much getting involved in everything. It's very important to make people feel that they can accomplish what they need to do. And Africa as a continent, I firmly believe that, you know, the solutions to our problems can only be solved by us people in Africa. Mm. And what we get from America and other countries is skills, you know, so people from other countries come and train us, or we come to other countries, learn and apply what we have. Even communities that are very poor, like in Bwindi, we work with the Batwa Pygmies, and they were evicted from the park in 1992 to create a national park. And there's a bit of a human rights issue there. People talk about it. But even with the Batwa, people feel sorry for them. They give them money, then they go and drink. They give them, you know, a towel, they sell it, they drink. But what we've done is we've engaged them as community health workers, and they have a lot of pride. And so they feel happy, they start educating their community, they stop drinking. For example, they start selling crafts instead of, and then they know, if I make a craft, I'll get money, I'll feed my family. So one time at a meeting, they said, we want to go in and see the gorillas as tourists. Mm-hmm. So they're beginning to, they just need to be given that ability to, you know, they need to be allowed to express themselves. They need to be allowed to be regular members of society and have a lot of pride. So even from the poorest to the very wealthy in the societies, everybody should be able to make decisions and give opportunities for others as well. Yeah. Another thing that has really taken shape in Uganda, and Dr. Musimbi has alluded to it, is the women empowerment. Mm-hmm. That has really taken shape in all over Africa. I guess Uganda has among the highest number of women members of parliament, just because, you know, there was put an affirmative seat was put there. Actually, my mother was one of the first women members of parliament in Uganda. And also there's in conservation, we realize that there's a big need in Africa to have more women taking leadership positions in conservation. So recently we created, together with the Fund of Lion Guardians and a few other African women, we created something called Women in Environment. So we're trying to get like more and more women, African women, in leadership positions in conservation. So that's an area that's also very important. Another one is the field of not depending on donors for money, for everything. I talked about the social enterprise we started, Gorilla Conservation Coffee. We can't just depend on grants. It's very important to look at trade and not just aid. And the more and more that we set up social enterprises wherever we're working and try and achieve the triple bottom line, financial, economic, you know, financial, social, and environmental impact, the more likely the continent will develop sustainably.
Next up, Ms. Unami Jeremiah of Mosadi Global Trust stresses the importance of meaningful youth engagement and fostering intergenerational dialogue that allows young people on the continent to build foundations for the future.
Meaningful youth engagement for me is one of the most important things that we can do. And not only have meaningful youth engagement, but the intergenerational dialogue and relationship that we need to build is very important. Because Africa as a continent, you know, all 54 countries are independent and they're sovereign. And how the media and the world portrays Africa as a country has to come to a stop, because really we are individuals. We are united by our continent, yes. But in terms of how, you know, the challenges we have similar, yes, but the context is very important. And when Africa gained its independence, at the time, it was the young people that were at the helm of the leadership. But the irony today is that now society has just done what to give young people that opportunity to lead and to be part of the process. Instead, we see that the young people that inherited the continent's leadership at the time are still there today. Mm-hmm. And that is a problem. And so I think a lot of these young people did not have a vision of transition, mm-hmm. to say, when I reach this age, this is what I will do. And it is very important today that we start building what our transition and our succession plan looks like.
Throughout the discussion, panelists emphasized the importance of comprehensive sexuality education, or CSE. CSE is an educational curriculum that covers a broad range of issues relating to the physical, biological, emotional, and social aspects of sexuality. First, we'll hear again from Ms. Jeremiah, and then Dr. Musimbi Kanyoro, President and CEO of the Global Fund for Women. Both women touched on the centrality of CSE to ensuring the well-being of young people and how to strengthen its effectiveness.
For me, the only way in which we can really embrace comprehensive sexuality education is to have that data, yes, but to also involve the parents. Because oftentimes I think these programs, we target young people in the school setting, but we forget that these young people do not live in a vacuum. They live in a house, sometimes with parents, sometimes with guardians. They live and exist in a community. And so if that community and if that household does not also have the same information that these young people are getting in a school setup, then, you know, once you get home, you might as well just leave your CSE out the door and come into my house.
The policies that happen even here impact how countries interpret their, especially information about sex. The gag rule currently is going to impact whether other countries all over the world can actually even introduce any education at all about sexual education and sexual information. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to be apprehensive about that. The second thing that I wanted to be able to say is that This idea of comprehensive sexual education is a problem all over the world because people misunderstand the return on investment. And when I'm talking about it to groups, whether it's in the USA or elsewhere, I usually ask them whether teaching somebody how to drive well makes them have more accidents or it makes them better drivers.
Good analogy.
I think the whole idea is for us to be able to make human persons who begin young to understand enough that they can be able to protect themselves or have sex when they want and who would they want it with, and be safe and healthy. And I do say that there is some understanding in this becoming much more alive now than we had, say, several years ago. But there is always this big thing about don't let sex be discussed. I do believe that the new movements that are coming up, which are exposing important people who are saying one thing and doing other things, even movements such as the Me Too movements showing sexual abuse in the churches, movements where we have said, let's just get the religious leaders on this discussion and then we'll get the answers because we have the religious leaders. And they come to the table, but we don't deal with their own abuse of younger people. These movements will make a difference in how we begin to tell the story of comprehensive sexual education to everyone, because that's a human right.
Integrated public health programs can have lasting benefits across communities and the environment. Dr. Kalema Zukusoka highlighted the role of community health workers in reducing the spread of disease and promoting conservation.
We have three programs: wildlife conservation, alternative livelihoods, and community health. They're all integrated. And we prevent and control disease transmission between people and gorillas through a lot of behavior change communication. And we work closely with what you call village health teams or community health workers, and we get them to promote conservation work. They're supposed to visit about 30 households each, and we get them to do that, and they talk about conservation, and they also hold a lot of village health talks. They also administer family planning injections through support from Family Health International. We are able to train them to start giving family planning injections, which has now become a national policy in Uganda. It's really important that they do something like that, because when they go to the hospital, which is normally about 20 miles and they have to walk, they get there and people are sick. They won't focus on women who just want to get a family planning injection. So they go back home and conceive. But now when we started training community health workers to give injections in their homes, the family planning rate went up significantly, and people are very happy about that.
And finally, the last word from Dr. Kanyoro, a veteran activist for women and girls' health and human rights. Here, she highlights the advantages of women's leadership in government and the workplace and calls for increased data on women's participation and recognition of its impact across sectors.
So I want to say some of the things that probably you won't read. One of the things that is really important where I have seen a good progress is women in Africa own their voice and they speak up. What you've heard from Unami, what you've heard from my other sister from Uganda, is symbolic of the whole continent, that there are women who understand the facts, whether it's facts about their own bodies, facts about their families, their communities, etc. And they're speaking up and wanting more recognition and space, wanting more resources, wanting more funding, and investing also in their own families and their children. Much if we were just to get the data of what women are contributing in any area, we would actually have a very positive way of thinking of Africa. But very often, we are so involved in looking at what has failed. And I think that women's voices and women's contribution is something that we need more data, segregated data, of how women are contributing in particular areas. And even for themselves, when we think about things like presence in the workplace, because women do go into every section of the workplace, we will see that they have made a difference in being in several areas. The area that is most often missing is the political presence. Of women, in there aren't enough women in government governance. There are some. We always, of course, use Rwanda as a great example of more than 50%, but it's not enough for us to just quote Rwanda. We have a woman president in Ethiopia, it's not enough. We had one in Liberia, it's not enough. That is an area that needs to be increased. When women are in leadership position, you see other areas impacted as well. And that's why I wanted to mention that one. Related to that, I think that many countries, individual countries, have invested a lot in community health workers. Mm-hmm. And I could bring in country by country, but now I see that the pattern is quite widespread on the whole continent. And some countries have brought that to very good scaling area. Countries like Ethiopia even saw a great community health workers program in Malawi. There's no country that I can name which hasn't actually heard that it's important to invest in community health workers. And what they do is what was exemplified. They are able to take family planning right to where people are. They are able to find out whether communities are suffering from other things that keep us not getting to where we want to go, including stunting. And there's quite some investment in the area of stunting and child health that I'm very pleased about to see as a progress that we are making. The whole debate of the last 5 years on improving health systems, I also believe that that has contributed quite a lot to where we are going. Areas of challenges remain youth unemployment on the whole continent. I could go country by country, but there are a lot of educated young people that need to go somewhere, and they need to be able to contribute more. But the planning of education in relationship to employment needs a lot of help in that area. And so a lot of youth unemployment, and that's a loss of needed skills and labors that we need.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Africa in Transition. To learn more about the April 16th event, please visit the Wilson Center website.